meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
All right, good evening, everyone. We have a busy night ahead of us tonight. If you've been following the news, you'll know of the two tragic murders. Of course, we see murders and hear about murders all the time, but two tragic murders of two co-eds, Eve Carson and Lauren Burke. Thankfully, there have been arrests made in these cases. But what I thought I would do tonight is bring on Dr. Clint Van Zandt. Clint, as you know, is a former FBI agent, analyst, author, hostage negotiator, a security expert, to come on and talk about those two particular cases, that and safety. Safety for that college student that's out there right now. Safety when you're on vacation. Safety, just plain safety today, because it's not the same today as it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. The streets are different, and you need to be aware and protect yourself. Hi, Clint.
Hey, good evening, Dana.
These two stories, again, we see tragic stories every day in the news. It's so sad to see two young, beautiful women like this taken too early, too soon, tragically. College co-eds, their whole life ahead of them. I'm sure you've had a chance to take a look at both cases. Let's talk about that, and let's get into how we can protect our students, our families that are out there.
Yeah, you know, there were just, unfortunately, more of these than you or I like to even consider sometimes. I was just, I've been overseas the last 3 weeks, and just before I left, I went out to Reno, Nevada for NBC Dateline for a show. I think it's going to either be this week or next week. We did the story of Breonna Dennison, as you recall, the 19-year-old college student who was just home visiting over the weekend. Who was kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and murdered, taken from a friend's residence. And then we, as you just mentioned, had the tragic loss again of Eve Carson and Miss Burke. Just, again, absolute tragedies. And it looks like in the case of Reno, Nevada, in the case of Breonna Dennison, this is a predator that's been working in that area. This is a sexual predator who had been stalking that community, who is responsible for the rape and attempted rape of a number of other young women in this same small college community, kind of enclave, two or three blocks where a lot of students living off campus. This guy was prowling, was looking. In fact, he assaulted one victim and then came back a month later going after the same victim again, couldn't get in her house. And then he was either walking or driving down the street, I think, saw Breonna Dennison sleeping on a couch just inside of her front door, unlocked door, and that's when he went in, kidnapped her, and of course she was assaulted and murdered. That investigation is ongoing. It appears the other two young women who were taken again were just, you know, what bothers me, Dana, more and more from your and my time on the street, but it's just the lack of value of human life that we see these basically predators, drug addicts, whatever their excuse for doing these horrific crimes. You know, as a parent, I've raised three children. Now I have going on six grandchildren. And you know, my children and everybody else's children are absolutely precious. And you think there are individuals out there that will take them, assault them, rape them, murder them, shoot them, bludgeon them, burn them alive, simply to steal $300, $200? We lose the ability to understand a true sociopath until we see these type of incidents and we see someone whose total disregard for the life of another, who lives only for that second and their own needs, and anyone else who gets in their way just becomes cannon fodder. Those are the things that, you know, really challenge us, and you say, what can we do to make ourselves safer in those environments?
Yeah, absolutely. And the brazenness of it, you know, you see in the case of the Carson girl using her vehicle, going to the ATM. In Denison, I've had different analysts on talking about this, him leaving underwear of another victim at the scene. Either that was a big mistake or he's bragging to leave something.
Yeah.
You know, what are we looking at as far as, before we get into the safety aspect, Clint, what are we looking at as far as the mentality goes? Yes, sociopath, one part is true there, but are we also looking at someone who's bragging, who don't care about the consequences, who just go out and do it anyway?
Yeah, you know, that appears to be the case in so many of these crimes that, you know, when we look at, in, at least in the United States, homicide is one of the more solvable crimes.
Yeah.
Usually, you know, it's one person being assaulted by someone they know, although in each of these three cases we're talking about here was something different. Two of these three have been solved because you get stupid things. You get people who will kidnap, assault, and murder, and then attempt to use, they'll drive the victim's car, they'll attempt to use the victim's ATM card, they're photographed, they have witnesses see them, and it's the brazenness of, I don't care. It's almost today with so many individuals, it's I don't care if I get caught even.
Yeah.
It's I'm going to do this at this moment because this is what satisfies me, this is what suits me, and I'm not worried about tonight, I'm not worried about tomorrow. You know, I mean, so many kids, like these three victims we're talking about, young women, they were all planning on their future. They were looking down the road, they were getting an education, they were developing friends, relationship, work experience, and yet these killers who have come and got them don't share any of those attributes that these young women did, and all three became victims. You know, some, you know, wrong place, wrong time, and others, just being on the street can make you a potential victim.
It's so tragic, for sure. Clint, how do we protect our kids? I have a daughter, second year college right now, a son in his first year, you know, teenage children who want to go out, want to be part of the scene, so to speak. And,
sure.
You know, you want to be a protective parent, yet you don't want to be overprotective. Of course, in my line of work, I'm going to be overprotective whether they like it or not. But not everyone is in that role. You know, you wrote an article here that deals with safety on vacations, but the first part of it was interesting because it talked about before Natalie Holloway and after Natalie Holloway, and I think that's so important in all aspects, whether your child's going off to college for the first time or is going on a school vacation.
Yeah, and you know, I think Natalie, what was an interesting, you know, although a bit tragic situation. I mean, most of us assumed that she had been assaulted and murdered and that her body was just simply taken out to sea. And that's why we've never been able to account, other than one of the individuals, Joran Vandersloot, in that taped interview that went over a couple of months, basically confessing. And then, of course, the judge in Aruba saying the guy has lied so many times, I can't even believe his confession.
Yeah.
And what does that leave us in a criminal justice system? But, you know, we're not talking, we're kids either. We're talking about grown adults. And,
yep.
You know, I, like you, three of my children went to school, two boys and a girl. And when my daughter was going to these 4 years, I mean, I would call her. I was in the FBI's behavioral science unit, and I would call her up, obviously on my own nickel, not the government's. But I'd call her up to talk to her, and she'd say, okay, Dad, what terrible thing happened to a female college student that if she only would have known better, it wouldn't have happened to her? So I said, well, you know, glad you brought that up, Jenna. And then, because it would be whatever case I was working that week of some terrible thing that had happened. I mean, you know, I'm, like you, protective. I mean, I had my daughter carried mace or capstan on her keychain. You know, I made sure her car was in good shape. She worked in a restaurant and waited tables, and I had a talk with the owner of the restaurant to ensure that someone would walk her out at 2:00 in the morning when she went out to her car. I got to tell you the truth. If I could have given her my gun to carry, I would have done it.
Absolutely.
But, you know, things like I would tell my daughter, and again, I'm on my way to Florida. There's it looks like a serial killer down in Boca Raton who's been taking women. out of shopping malls as they walk out, been kidnapping them, in one case killed a woman and her daughter and other victims. And it's whether it's a shopping mall or a college campus, it's when you're walking to your car, you know, have your keys in your hand. Number one, you want to be able to either click or put the key in the door and open it. Number two, that key between your fingers is not a bad weapon if you had to rake across somebody's face or stab them in the eye if they jumped at you. So it's a nice thing for a person to have in their hand should you need it. And, you know, number three, get to your car, open the door, get in, close the doors, lock the car up, and then, you know, go through your wallet, your purse, find your sunglasses, get on the cell phone. But don't do things that are going to set you up, that are going to target you as a victim. Predators that are out there, my experience, and I bet yours too, are that there are sexual predators, there are kidnappers, robbers, murderers out there, and many times they're looking for the wounded or for the lackadaisical gazelle. You know, like a lion would look at a herd of gazelles running by, and he sits there or she does, and they look for the one they think they can take. Well, predators do that on college campuses and malls, other things. They look for someone talking on a phone whose attention is somewhere else. They're looking for somebody who's got an iPod with earplugs in both ears who can't hear you when you come up behind them. They wait, like in the case in Boca Raton where these women come. They open up their car, they put their baby in the car, in the car seat, and then go around to the back of the car, raise up the lid like on a Jeep and put the bags in. That's when a predator strikes again. They're looking for that moment of opportunity. And what we have to do is be aware of where we're at, what our surroundings are, and limit our exposure to someone like that. And I'm not suggesting people have to be paranoid in the world. I'm just saying we have to be aware of what's going on around us and be constantly crunching that data to understand if there's a potential threat out there. You need to play what if. If something happened, what would I do? How would I get in my car? And my daughter asked one time, she said, well, what if somebody jumps in front of my car? You know, I'm in the car and they jump in front and they're trying to stop me. They're trying to take me out of the car. I said, Jenna, you call that person a speed bump. Yep. You go right over exactly. The top of them. I said, I will sell my house. I will empty my bank account. Anything else in the world to defend you. And yet, I remember telling her, Dana, you know, one case, another young woman was kidnapped on a college campus, was taken in her own car. She was made to drive while the offender sat next to her with a weapon pointed on her. She went through two or three toll booths on an interstate. Then he took her off the road, took her to a house that was half built. Nobody was living there. Sexually assaulted her and then left her naked, tied up, strung up inside the house where, you know, just by the exposure to the elements, she could have died. And when we did the interview, trying to identify the perpetrator, trying to, talk to the young woman about what happened, one question that, you know, I rolled out, I said, you know, you went through a couple of toll booths. Did you think about saying something? Well, yeah. You know, he told me not to speak. I said, you know, for future reference, that's a time to take your car and wreck it right into the side of a toll booth.
Yep.
And she said, oh, my dad would have really been upset with me if I would have wrecked my car.
Yeah, and it's exactly that, and it's the mentality, and it's the, just before I let you go, Clint, and I appreciate you coming on, we're talking about safety here with Dr. Clint Van Zandt, former FBI agent, author, and safety expert. Sixth sense, something about using, you know, empty stairwells or elevators by yourself. You know, you think about it, maybe I shouldn't do it, but you go ahead and do it anyway. Let's talk about that just before I let you go.
Absolutely. You know, many times you're in a hotel, you're in a dorm, you're in some place that there's not many other people around. You go, let's say an elevator, and you go to get on the elevator. It's, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. You're the only person around. Someone comes up alongside you. You don't know this person. There's just this sixth sense about you that said, you know, I bet he or she, they don't look right. Well, we have to get past being socially correct where we say, I don't care who it is, I'm going to get on that elevator and go up with them because I don't want to embarrass them or embarrass myself.
Yep.
you know, that's why we have, you know, we used to have this fight or flight syndrome, you know, that, that would tell us there is danger, and we've overcome that with social correctness. But why would you put yourself in a steel, completely soundproof cylinder that's going up 5, 10, 25, 50 stories and have that person have access to you in there, and you have no way to defend yourself, no way to do anything, when all you have to do is say, you know, excuse me, I'm waiting for my boyfriend, my girlfriend, my husband, my wife, or friend of mine. You go ahead and go up. I'll catch the next elevator. And it's the same thing for stairwells. I mean, stairwells, you know, they're a much faster thing. We could get up and down them as opposed to elevators. But when we're at hotels, when we're at, you know, on vacation at some place where we really don't know what could be inside of that stairway. Number one, that's where people are sitting there. Sometimes they use that, you know, if it's a city street, you'll find drug addicts in there that are shooting up. You'll find alcoholics that are in there. And you'll find predators that will hang out in those stairwells looking for a potential victim who would come up in there. Again, you know your surroundings, know your limitations. You know, set boundaries. And one thing that I always talk about and told my children when they were in school, always have, remember that great Tom Cruise movie, Top Gun?
Yep.
And the one line out of that Top Gun that Tom Cruise, the character, said, always stay with your wingman.
Yep.
And that's what happened to Natalie Holloway. She didn't stay with her wingman. She went off on her own. And that's what happens when a lot of other people get in trouble. They should be out with a friend, a buddy, a pal, a roommate, or something like that, and they separate and go on their own. That's when that predator out there can cut them out of the herd. So if you've got a wingman, you need to be responsible to each other. That's how we get home safe every night.
Absolutely. Well said. Thanks again, Clint.
Thanks for having me, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Clint Van Zandt, and, you know, it's advice for everyone. Doesn't matter if you're on vacation or if you're a college student out on your own or if you're just, you know, traveling and wanting to go to a mall or whatever. It's a different world out there, and the predators are up and around for sure. I sat down with Larry Garrison today, and we had a quick interview and talked about the Elliot Spitzer incident, where he spent some time with a prostitute, and he's no longer the governor of New York. And it was interesting to see Larry on the Fox Business Channel the other day talking about the business and the money aspect around this. It's fascinating. Some may think it's kind of crazy, but it's very true. Here's Larry. We call him the Newsbreaker. Okay, we're back. It's been a little while since I've had the Newsbreaker on. Of course, we all know the Newsbreaker is Larry Garrison. He's a New York Times bestselling author, president of Silver Creek Entertainment, and a regular on my show and others. I want to talk a little bit about Governor Spitzer, and I'm just going to read a little bit from an article that I see here. It said, Kristen, the high-priced prostitute whom New York government Elliot Spitzer is believed to have hired, has been identified by the New York Times as Ashley Alexandra Dupree, a 22-year-old aspiring musician and native of New Jersey. Now, I happened to be watching the Fox Business Channel the other day, and there's my friend, the Newsbreaker Larry Garrison, on there talking about Ashley Dupree. And it was an interesting topic to see how Ashley Dupree will fare financially out of this. Larry, welcome back to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine. It just seems like these stories are, well, they're spiraling now. In fact, the new governor of New York is admitting today to some extramarital affairs. And I don't know, is the politics and politicians, do they have no moral standard? I guess that's a show for another time. I want to talk a little bit about Kirsten, however you want to say that. Ashley Dupree.
Ashley
Dupree.
Name of the day.
Yeah, exactly. And she's, you know, she's all over the internet. She's doing well with her music. I think 98 cents a pop on wherever you can download her from. But here's a story that is broke wide open, and I'm curious your take as far as this young lady and what it will mean for her and her future.
Well, basically, Fox News had me on because I've been a story broker over and above being an author and producing film and TV. I am not doing a movie and a book. on this story. They wanted to know how a young woman like this would be capitalizing on a story like this. And basically, I had spoken to her attorney. I've also spoken to family members. Bottom line here, she's being inundated by the world right now. As you know, she's making a lot of money. I've heard anywhere from $200,000 to $2 million at 98 cents a hit, as you said you were correct, on her song. And basically from there, I've also been privy to the fact that Larry Flint came in and offered her $1 million to strip down totally. And I don't know if she's accepted it or not. I also heard that Playboy was not in the picture, although we both know that there's two sides to every story and then the truth. In actuality, she might be able to parlay into a movie and a book deal only because of the magnitude of the story.
Now, I brought up morality earlier, and this isn't the first time that a politician and a prostitute have been connected together. It goes way back into the 60s and 70s, and we've heard all sorts of sordid stories out there, and we know the government is, they're not all teetotalers there who live perfect lives, but that, again, is another story. But what I wanted to ask you, Larry, is today, 2008, it's a little bit different. There's a lot, especially young people, who may take this young lady and put her on a mantle and say, isn't she wonderful? But there's, like you say, two sides to every story. There's more than just the financial aspect of this.
Well, that's true, and it's really sad. I mean, I handled the scandal with Dick Morris when he wrote the book Behind the Oval Office, and we did damage control. And it's really a pity, but in actuality, history repeats itself. And hopefully, young people will see that this moment of glory may not, financially it may be a windfall, but where do you go from there? Look at some of the people thereafter. What is Monica Lewinsky doing now?
Yeah.
She may have been offered certain movie and book deals and whatnot, but where are they today?
You know, marketing is interesting. I can't recall right now what client number Spitzer was identified as. It doesn't matter. But all of a sudden, you see all over the internet, internet sites selling T-shirts, client number, whatever. This marketing issue is, it goes crazy is what it does. I know it may be fly by night and only last for 6 months, but not only is there a financial profit windfall for this young girl, maybe, but for others who decided they want to grab onto this and run with it, whether it's in T-shirts or whatever?
Well, all I can do is speak for me, just like when I did the John Mark Carr story. I believe in the Son of Sam law. Mm-hmm. I believe that people who break the law should not capitalize on it. So I try not to participate in any way. Yet there are people who are news junkies who are jumping on the bandwagon, and you're always going to find people who are going to want to make a dollar off of a story like this. It's really sad.
If you were to, speak to Elliot Spitzer today and you were advising him as far as the media goes or whatever, Larry, what would you tell him? He's kind of shut down right now and the focus has turned to this young lady, and we haven't heard much of him, but being in the public, he's going to have to say something sometime.
Well, as I always say, the truth is better than the spin. There may be more behind this story.
Yeah.
He's going to need someone who's going to do damage control for him. Was he a sex addict? Did he need or does he need help? Sure looks like it. Even if his wife, which I do not believe, had affairs, like the new governor is coming out and saying, and his wife is saying, we've had a troubled marriage. If there is something indicative with the truth here for him to come out, that might help. Or time heals all wounds, and you know, he's a very, very wealthy man, and with time he'll survive this.
What are you working on? We haven't talked about that for a while. You're always a busy guy.
Well, I've been having a good time working on breaking news, working as a journalist. I'm looking for my next book right now. I've also been doing publicity, helping people that I care about, friends, getting on some of the shows as legal analysts. For me, I'm just enjoying life right now.
We a little bit later on in the program, I'm going to have our mutual friend, Los Angeles County District Attorney, Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs, who has been very busy herself. I would like to get you to comment just briefly on Robin Sachs and the fine work that she's been doing in the media.
She is a powerhouse. She's an incredible woman. It's funny. I don't normally compare people, but this is a compliment for Robin. I put her in the same category as my sister, our Stephanie Good. Both of them work to put child predators away. They're both working against sex crimes. And to me, being a dad, I think I applaud them for what they are doing. Robin is on her way to her own little stardom here. She just wrote a book. I know she was just named the national spokesperson for Amber Stick,
right,
which is just incredible. And both my sister Stephanie and Robin are on the blog for Women in Crime. Just recently I was asked to be the token male to write something on that, and I will. Somehow that's funny. I always wind up that way, but it's great. And all I can say is Robin is a very, very special lady that just cares about people. And that's a rarity in this world. It's great.
Yeah, I hear you for sure. Larry Garrison, we know him as the Newsbreaker, president of Silver Creek Entertainment. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, we'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the author of a new book called Serpent Box. It's a fascinating story, and his name is Vincent Corella, and he will join me here in just a couple of minutes. And then later on, that district attorney that we were talking about, Robin Sachs, will be here to talk about Crazy Charlie Manson. He's back in the news again. Will he be going to court again, him and his team of murderers and misfits and crazies? We'll talk to Robin Sachs about that a little bit later. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name is Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. There's a new book out called Serpent Box. It's from HarperCollins.com. You can find it on Amazon.com, wherever. We have a link to it on our webpage. And I'm going to read a description here. A powerful first novel from award-winning writer Vincent Corella. Serpent Box is set in post-war Appalachia, where the destiny of a 10-year-old boy unfolds against the rich background of wild snake handlers, folk healers, tent revivalists, sinners and skeptics. That sounds fascinating to me, and it's a real kick to have Vincent Corella on the phone with me to talk about his new book. Hello, sir.
Dana, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Now, just reading the intro to the book, Serpent Box, makes you interested, makes you wonder. You know, we've seen the stories, we've seen the old newsreels, we've read the magazine articles, but we never really knew if this was something that actually happened or not, and you've written about it, and you can tell us lots about it. What got you to write the book?
Well, you know, I never believed that it happened either, and I thought that this was some sort of a myth. And I saw a photograph of one of these serpent handlers, actually a child. It was a little boy, and he was holding in his hand a jar of kitchen lye, and he had a box in his other hand with a rattlesnake in it. And I began reading about this boy, and I thought, no, this can't be true. People don't really do this. And the more I read about it and the more research I did, I began to realize that not only is this real, but it's actually a rather beautiful faith.
You know, and that's one thing that if you live during the time, or if you have family during the time, but John Q. Public, the person that just likes to sit down and read a good book, will look for something, I call it a draw, something that will make him interested. When you wrote the book, I know you talk about this on your website, and for those of you wondering, again, we'll have a link to that on ours, but it's www.serpentbox.com. You talk about the meaning of life. That's an interesting correlation between that and why you wrote the book. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, I wrote this book to answer a question that I had personally. I didn't really intend to make this thing public or to make a lot of money or anything like that. I had a lapse of faith. You know, I didn't really understand what God was, and I wrote the book to try to understand that. And I did. I did come to understand my own sort of view of it. And in terms of the meaning of life, I figured out, I guess, throughout the process that, you know, what life is all about for me is helping other people, you know, and making a difference in other people's lives. And that is explained in some detail in Serpent Box. If we reach out and we try to help other human beings, then our own lives are enriched. And I think that's what it's all about.
You know, sadly, all you have to do is turn on the television, look on the internet, read the newspaper, listen to a radio show like mine. You'll hear about all the tragedy today, the death, the destruction, the morality issues, you name it, drugs, alcohol. It just goes on and on and on. Even politics swims around down in the gutter, and you don't have anything, you know, you come up with this term, what's the world coming to? But this is an interesting book that you've written, because you talk about, you know, the characters Jacob, Charles, Rebecca, and their lives and how it, you know, how they were affected. Just turn that around for a minute and look at today compared to what went on then and what goes on in a atmosphere like that, and compare the two if you could.
Well, I think it's sort of misleading to believe that the olden days, so to speak, were any different than
right.
The times we live in now. I believe that times have always been violent, and there have always been things to worry us and concern us and to be afraid of. But those people, the people you mentioned, the people in my book, lived a somewhat simpler life in a somewhat simpler rural environment. Yet there was a backdrop of racism and hatred there as well. And I think one of the issues that I do talk about a little bit in the book is, you know, is the fact that lynching was prevalent in this country for a very long time.
Right.
And it's something that's rarely discussed. You know, the between 1880 and I think 1965, there were 4,000 documented cases of lynching in America, and that's just the documented cases. And that's an alarming thing, you know, and that's one of the issues that Jacob deals with in the book. And he befriends a black man, and he helps him, and the two of them help each other, and they enrich each other's lives.
And bringing that, you know, what we see in the media today and what we hear about the divides all the time, the racial divides, the racial issues. But to see it brought together and two of different color work together and get along with each other is so important. Just before I let you go, and I appreciate you coming on, I always ask authors this question. If someone is looking through the bookstore and they're looking for something, and they pick up your book and they look at it, what is going to attract them the most?
I think the fact that the story does focus on a 10-year-old boy, you know, a boy who's sort of in that nowhere land between childhood and adulthood. And that struggle that we've all gone through, you know, what does it mean to be an adult? What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a productive member of society? It's a scary and it's a lonely time in our lives.
Yep.
And this boy goes through, you know, quite a journey trying to figure that out for himself. And I think that's the most compelling aspect of the book.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. The book is Serpent Box. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, and there'll be a link to that. I know we're having some problems on the Scared Monkeys page, but keep looking, scaredmonkeys.com. It's an excellent book called Serpent Box. We're going to be back here in a minute with Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs. We're going to talk about our old friend Charles Manson. You know, I did a daily commentary on Charles Manson, I don't know, about a year ago now, and I took a lot of flack for it. In fact, it got tens of thousands of hits on YouTube. It was put up there. And I think one of the responses to my Charles Manson commentary might have even come from Charles Manson himself. Now, I'm not sure if he has access to the internet or not, or somebody sure talked like him, but they weren't too happy when I said I was surprised that Charles Manson, you know, being denied parole all these times, is still walking the face of the earth, because criminals like he usually don't survive very long in jail. There's usually a form of jailhouse retribution that is taken out. Now, I wasn't calling for the death of Charles Manson, but I find it interesting now, 40 years later, that the talk of Charles Manson, his cult, his gang, and deaths of others is back in the news. So we're going to bring on Robin Sachs, district attorney, to talk about that and what she thinks may happen, that and some other things that Robin may have to talk about. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back. Have you been watching the news lately? Of course you have. Everyone watches the news. You will have seen the story of Charles Manson and his crazy gang, his cult, has come back. Not only do we talk about Charles Manson when he comes up for his parole hearings and how he always gets denied, that all of a sudden, out in the Barker Ranch in the California Hills, there's a story of some potential other murder victims that may bring this whole case back to light, and the debate is on, do you prosecute something 40 years later? What I thought I'd do is go to my my go-to person at the L.A. County District Attorney's Office, Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs, to talk about that and other things. Hi, Robin. Welcome back.
Good evening, Dana. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with us tonight. Before we get into Mr. Manson, which is, we could do a full hour show just on that sometime, let's talk a little bit about you. I know we had you on the air here last show with the gals from Women in Crime, Inc., and what a success that is turning out to be, including yourself, and I'm so proud to be associated with you, gals. But something that I neglected to talk to you about that you should be proud of is your association affiliation with something called National Amber Stick. And I've had a couple of emails saying, what's that about and why didn't you talk to Robin about it? So let's do that.
Okay. National Amber Stick is a wonderful, wonderful product that's actually out there on the market right now, and for $49, and I hate to sound like a commercial because
that's okay.
It's really not. It's not really about being a commercial. It's really about a little tiny flash drive that we all carry around to keep information that can provide a little bit of peace of mind for parents out there. Basically, what it is if parents or teachers or school officials upload, and each drive can upload up to 300 pictures and data on 300 children, where if in the event that there was a missing child, it automatically takes the picture and takes the data and turns it into a direct access to law enforcement, and completely indirectly makes posters, all of the things that in the heat of a moment that any parent or any person in crisis would not want to have to deal with, is already ready-made there. So for $49, you can have a little bit of peace of mind, and it's a great tool to remind parents that we should always be thinking about children's safety.
Yeah, how important is that? Just earlier on in the program, I was talking to Clint Van Zandt, former FBI agent and now security expert, and we were talking about just that, protecting our kids. And not only do we see these tragic stories all the time about the predators, the abductions, the murders, even with college co-eds, you name it, we've seen it. Natalie Holloway, all about that. A lot of parents just aren't prepared for something like this. You hate to say it, you hate to think it, and you hope that it'll never happen to you, but when it does, you're not prepared. And it sounds like this is something with today's technology that you need to have.
That's right. I mean, I don't know, for anyone who has kids, you know, anyone who says to me, hey, can I see a picture of your kid? I can show them, and in my wallet, I have a great picture of my 5.5-year-old when she was 18 months old. And if for some reason she ran off in a store and someone said to me, hey, you know, do you have a picture of her right here with you? I'd have to show them an 18-month-old picture, which she looks nothing like today.
Exactly.
But I do have 5 flash drives hanging from my keychain, so if you can have that little bit of, I think we stay a little bit more current when we use technology. Everyone's downloading pictures. Easy enough to download them right onto a flash drive.
Yeah, that's so important. Is there a website for National Amber Stick?
It's nationalamberstick.com.
And is there going to be a lot of PR promotion going on here in the next little while?
There will be. There will be. We're actually just getting ready to do a media junket and go out there. We've got some great folks who are involved. And what's so nice is that the people behind the National Amber Stick that supports law enforcement and is using it as an opportunity to fundraise for local law enforcement or national law enforcement departments, people who are missing items, any sort of community civic organizations that need some extra funding. You can team up with the National Amber Stick and they'll donate proceeds to whatever organization that supports law enforcement.
Well, it sounds fantastic and something that you and I will talk about more in the future, I'm sure. You talk about high-profile cases, being a deputy district attorney in the Los Angeles area, California area. You're going to run into lots of those. You can't talk specifics, I know, but one case that has come back again is Charles Manson. You know, you're looking at Death Valley National Park. You're looking at excavations now. You're looking at murders that allegedly may have happened 40 years ago. This is a movie script, you know, the people would love to write. Jailhouse confessions, district attorneys, being able to prove cases. Manson himself is a piece of work. I'm not sure what's going on or if you can say, but the DA that gets this case or the investigators that get this case 40 years later, how do you proceed with this, Robin, besides pulling all your hair out?
Well, the one, I guess, benefit and the one thing in a murder case, as we know, is there is no statute of limitations.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about running into the statute of limitations or worrying about a clock ticking. The fact of the matter is, can you put the pieces of the puzzle together to make a case? Now, the Manson case has always been an aberration. Here you have a case where, you know, where the prosecution proved its case purely by watching the control that the defendant Charlie Manson had over his disciples. And so in that way, if so long as you can show that over time, I don't know how much more difficult it would be now versus how it was then, because it wasn't really easy then either.
You know, there's forensics involved, obviously, but the part that I look at right now, you know, obviously you have to have a case that you can prove to take to court, is how do you reinvestigate this? Do you take it to a grand jury? Do you just start at the beginning because there may be family members that are no longer alive, witnesses that are no longer alive, but then again, a lot of his disciples are still out there and maybe now we'll talk against him a little bit.
That's true. I think I know nothing of what's going on in the current investigation, so I want to just say that whatever I'm saying is my own personal opinion and how I would handle this. I think you're going to have a tough time. I mean, first of all, the one thing that we do have on our side now is modern technology and forensics and the benefit of hindsight to a certain extent and all the media in this case. Which normally doesn't work in the prosecution's favor, may actually work in the prosecution's favor in this type of case. The question, though, is that the only reason why I can see going after him in this kind of case is to get the death penalty that wasn't in place at the time.
Right.
And that is a tough sell on a jury, I think. So you know, the standard of proof being difficult as it is, but then knowing that you're not supposed to think about punishment as part of your deliberations, I don't know how you get around that when you already have someone who's been in custody this amount of time and denied parole this amount of time and not likely to ever get paroled. So what's the upside, and what more do we have? And I think it is it's an interesting case, and, you know, but, you know, justice delayed is still justice. So hopefully they can put the pieces together and get a tenacious team, and I'll thank my lucky stars that I'm not on that.
If you're just joining us, Los Angeles County Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs is here. You know, being where you are and studying law, it's probably hard not to have covered or studied or written about this case at one time or another, because it's so fascinating. Everyone knows about the book Helter Skelter, Vincent Bugliosi, Stephen Kay, all the people involved. You know, you must have looked at this case several times yourself. Are you surprised now, 40 years later, it's coming up this way again?
Well, you know, it's a fascinating case. When I was in law school, I actually worked on a book with a professor of mine, Harry Caldwell, and he's known as Harry Mitchell Caldwell. And he wrote a book called Ladies and Gentlemen of the Jury, where we analyzed closing arguments to see what the impact of a closing argument was on the jury. And the fascinating part about this case was, besides the stellar advocacy in the beginning of kind of the real media trials, was that in the closing argument itself, when Mr. Bugliosi was delivering his closing argument and Stephen Kay was there, the control that Manson had over what was going on throughout the whole process was an unbelievable selling point in depicting what exactly Manson was about. And in studying that and looking at that, it was really a lot of what happened kind of behind the scenes that proved the case. In addition, I went through the archives in Los Angeles County to go through the documents itself to get my hands on the transcripts, and the scribbles that Manson had on the side of legal pads were unbelievably telling. There was a lot of paperwork that was kept, the scribbles that he must have made to counsel or what have you, and letters written to judges throughout the time that were just talking about a freak the guy really is.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I talked about this a little bit at the beginning of our interview, or just before our interview. When you talk about a character like Manson, and you look at other high profile criminals, murderers that have been sent away, if the death penalty doesn't catch up to them, usually there's a jailhouse retribution that does, and one has to wonder if Manson still doesn't have that well, what's that power, that error about him that nobody wants to even go near him? Because I'm surprised he's still alive, and I'm not calling for his death. I'm just surprised that he's been in jail so long.
Yeah, I am too. I don't know what to say about that other than that he must get really great security and protection.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a character like that is something else. Well, it'll be really interesting to see where this case goes. And I'm hoping for the family's sake that there's some, and I hate using that term, closure, come about, and some answers be given. And if anything, it'll make great topics for talk shows like mine and cable news shows that Robin Sachs will come on and talk about this case. How are you doing and what are you busy doing now? I know you can't talk about specifics, but I'm sure your life is very exciting every day in court.
Every day in court. You know, as you know, I handle child sexual assault cases, and the media is no stranger to child sexual assault cases, whether it's Michael Jackson or Jeremy Gaffin, who I have, who I'm dealing with right now. Whatever the person is, celebrity or not, or wannabe celebrity, we get those cases, and it's interesting to find what the media picks up on. Jeremy Gaffin is a case that I am handling, and he's known as a music producer, although I'm just trying to figure out what he actually produced. So if you could figure that out for me, I would be thankful.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a story that we'll have to follow, and I'm sure you'll do a great job with it. Deputy District Attorney Robin Sachs, you're always welcome on this program. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you so much. Take care, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye. And that's it. You know, I'm sure Robin would like to tell us more about that case, but that's a fascinating one that I'm sure we'll all be following here in the next little while. Los Angeles being a DA, it's got to be fascinating, the cases that you will cover. My name's Dana Presser. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. I thank you for joining us. I encourage you to check out our webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com to listen to podcasts of programs, listen live, listen to our daily commentaries, and leave comments about our shows. And we'll catch you again real soon. Thank you to all my guests. Good night.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.